Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to continue to talk about Shanti Deva's Guide to the Bodhisattva Way, Chapter 6, on patience. I think this is the... this is lecture number 9. So we're up to lecture 9. And now the verses are in the 100s. So we're actually almost done. I think this talk and then one more next time I speak as a kind of summation. Okay, so what we've been talking about is skillful means. And I think, you know, I like to say this when I start each one, which is that Shantideva was an 8th century Buddhist monk, famous for this text. And he was, this is text is used a lot in the Tibetan school. Shantideva was Indian, but this is a very important text in Tibetan Buddhism. Okay, so let's dive into the next set of verses. So essentially these verses are about how your enemies are actually helpful to your practice. Shantideva said, "Those who wish to cause me suffering are like Buddhas, bestowing waves of blessings. As they open the door for my not going to an unfortunate realm, why should I be angry with them?" This is a hard pill. You know, this is tough. So he says, you know, these are these people who are, we think of as being enemies. These are people who are causing us problems that we don't like. And he's saying, actually, this is a blessing. These folks are Buddhas. So that totally turns that on its head. And when you think about it, you know, we really need something to push against in order to practice. It's like, if we were living in some kind of beautiful heavenly realm without any problems at all, would we need to practice? But we don't live in that realm. And as I say a lot, we live in the Saha world. Part of the reason I say we live in the Saha world is because, you know, sometimes we think to ourselves, like, why? Like, why? You know, why is all this stuff happening? Why is there all this conflict? Why is blah, 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 you know? But the reality is, this is the Buddhist world. The Buddhist world is this world that we live in, Shakyamuni Buddhist Buddha field. And so this world is, one of the hallmarks of this world is that there is suffering. One of the hallmarks of being in this world is that we struggle with difficulties. And those difficulties give us the opportunity to practice. They give us the opportunity to cultivate compassion, cultivate wisdom, cultivate skillful means. So we need this something, this conflict usually, in order for us to practice. So where does that arise? And I think it just arises in all the time in our everyday lives. It's like, as I've said before, we're building muscles in our practice. The only way you're going to build muscles is by lifting heavy stuff. You know, so you don't start out with lifting, going into the gym and deciding you're going to pick up 500 pounds. Like, you probably, most of us would not be successful at that. And if we managed somehow to get that thing off the ground, we'd probably like throw our backs out. So we have to start with our little barbells, our 10-pound weights while we're watching TV. So this way in which our practice, our everyday practice in our lives is like this. Like the thing that we're working with is not too big for us to work with. It's not a weight that we can't lift. So then when something really big happens in our lives that is really difficult, then we can address it. Then we can come forward and meet that practice in a way that's skillful. But we can't expect ourselves to do it if we don't do it from the very beginning, if we don't make that effort. So these persons that we call enemies, which is kind of a strong word, we can use things like, I don't like this person, I don't like this situation, I feel impatient with this situation, I wish it would go away, all those kinds of feelings that come up for us that might be some kind of aversion to that situation. And when that arises, we say, oh, this is actually a chance for me to start flexing those muscles. It's a chance for me to really respond to this with practice. You know, oftentimes people come, as a teacher, people come and they don't want to come and talk to us, Jocko and I, unless they have some big problem. You know, like, oh, something horrible has happened in my life. But actually, if you come and talk to us about the little problems, then we can say, yeah, you know, you might consider this practice. You might do this. You get impatient at the supermarket? You get impatient at the supermarket? Well, here's a practice that you can do. Here's a way that you can relate to this. So think about that. So this way that it gives us a chance to cultivate the qualities of the person, the qualities that we want to mirror, the qualities that we want to embody, that we want to completely inculcate into who we are as a person, so we don't even have to think about it. So again, Shanti Deva says, those who wish to cause me suffering are like Buddhas bestowing waves of blessing. And I kind of like this because, remember, Shanti Deva is talking to that part of ourselves that's kind of a little bit selfish, small-minded self. So he says, those who wish to cause me suffering. Actually, most people are not out to cause us suffering. Like the folks who drive us nuts, they're not saying to themselves every morning, ha, 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 you know, I'm going to go and do this thing to this person. They're actually just trying to alleviate their own suffering. Or they're just doing something that's about how they view the world. So it's not personal. So I like the fact that Shanti Deva starts out with those who wish to cause me suffering. And then he says, but actually those very people that you think that you want to blame are Buddhas. And the next verse is, if without it, the conflict, something, patience in this case, does not occur, and if with it, it does come to be, then since this enemy would be the cause of patience, how can I say that he prevents it? Okay, I'll read the verse again. If without it, or if without this conflict, this something, that this quality that we want to have, in this case, patience, does not occur, and if with it, it does come to be, in other words, with this conflict and this difficulty, it does come to be, then since this enemy would be the cause of patience, how could I say that he prevents it? So, you know, we do this a lot. It's like the way our minds work. We say, oh, this situation is keeping me from being generous. I was really struck once, you know, you see homeless people, and sometimes our response to homeless people is to say something like, oh, they deserve it. Or if they had done something different, they would be like better people. You know, this way that we want to blame people who are doing something that causes us to feel uncomfortable. And maybe that discomfort is that we realize in some part of ourselves that we're not being generous. That we realize that that in this case, perhaps practicing generosity would be helpful. And a Tibetan teacher said one time about people who are homeless, he said, you know, give them money because that's where they are in that place. That's where they need to find some comfort. Does this make sense to you? It's like, don't make up some story about what that person needs that's not unattainable in that moment. So that really inspired me, and I would carry around change when I lived in San Francisco and give people change that I had. So I didn't have to give them a lot of money, but this sense of, and I was doing it for myself, which was to let go of this judgmental mind about this person who is panhandling as an excuse. The judgmental mind is kind of an excuse for why I'm not being generous, instead of using it as a way to explore. You know, we use that negative mind to explore, why am I not being generous? Why am I not being willing in this moment to do something that is really not asking of me very much? You know, I'm not taking this person home with me. They're not moving in with me. I'm giving them a buck. I'm giving them a 50 cents or whatever. This way in which this was an opportunity for me, you know, to learn something about my own resistance to doing this and to overcome that, you know. So this way that there's a chance for me to look at a situation that I want to reject and blame and say, okay, I'm not going to do this here. Even though it's difficult for me, I'm going to do something different. And it isn't a problem, you know. And it makes a difference to that person, and it also makes a difference to me. So this way in which we can look at the things that are going on in our minds that are negative, that we want to blame someone else for what we perceive as a problem for us. And in some ways, that logic is very screwy, you know. And so when we start doing that, maybe we should look at that and say, we got a little screwy logic here? You know, am I, this doesn't make sense? So So Shanti Deva is saying, you know, since this enemy is the cause of my patience, how can I say that that person prevents it? So if I, and using again the example, if I look at a homeless person and say, well, I'm not going to give you any money because I know you're just going to go spend it on drugs or something like that, this kind of whole judgmental scenario that I'm doing in my head, if I just give that person money, they're giving me the opportunity to be generous. So why should I be angry with that person because they've just given me an opportunity to practice? So Dogen says in his classical Kato, which means 20 vines, he says, these problems that we encounter are actually the source of our realization. He said in Kato, he said, in general, although sacred beings all aim to learn the cutting of the roots of the complicated, so the cutting of the roots of our problems, they do not learn that cutting means cutting the complicated with the complicated. So let me paraphrase that. In general, although those of us who are practicing, we all want to learn about how to work with the roots of our problems. But what we don't learn, that cutting these roots of our problems means that we go into our problems. So what we like to do is say, I have a problem, it doesn't exist. Right? It's like, I don't want this, it doesn't exist. My mom had an expression, which when she first told me this, I was kind of aghast. Her expression was that she said, well, when I have a problem, I pick up the corner of the rug, I put the problem under the rug, and then I stomp it until it's completely flat. Really? But that's what we like to do. You know, we like to go, oh, I've got a problem, so let me, or I have a person that's a problem for me, or something like that. So I'm going to figuratively stick them under the rug, you know, and stomp them till they're flat. I think sometimes when we feel really overwhelmed by our lives, we feel overwhelmed by some problem, we're like going, I cannot cope with this. I can't deal with this. So, you know, I'm going to act like it doesn't exist. So Dogen's saying, you know, our problems, if we can go into those problems, take what we know about practice, take the teachings, and apply them to the issues and problems that we have, that is entering into the problem, not rejecting the problem, but entering into the problem. And it is through that entering in that transformation happens. So this way that we feel our resistance, we understand that we don't want this, we look at it and say, okay, what's happening here? You know, how can I work with this in a way that is transformative rather than making it worse? Or trying to get becoming, in a way, this way of rejection, in a way, is kind of like a violent response. So this is, you know, our, even though we don't want to go into these problems, they're actually where we'll come through the problem. So our transformation from being unskillful, ignorant, and delusion, being delusional, or engaging in that kind of behavior happens by our mistakes, through our mistakes, entering into those mistakes, and investigating what would have been a better way to respond, right? And seeing what we might need to work on in ourselves. So I bet every one of you have heard this business axiom, and people say, the way that you're successful in business is that you fail. Like if you fail in business and then you don't come back, you know, you don't look at what didn't work. You don't look at why the business didn't work, but you just walk away from it. Then how can you possibly be successful? And it's true. We're always failing. Not always, but we often fail. And that failure is what informs us about success. The failure of our skillful means is what creates wisdom in us. It's what creates empathy. It's like when somebody else is struggling, and in some way you can say, well, they're failing. You know, they're struggling. And you look at their life and you go, I know what that's like. I know what it's like to feel like I'm failing. I know what it's like to be depressed. I know what it's like to feel sad, to feel grief, all of the things that as human beings we feel. I know what it's like. to be in that situation. And out of that comes empathy. I know what it's like to have problems. And I know what it's like to say, you know, to want to work with that problem and to say, oh, what is it that I did that didn't work? How can I change that? How can I make atonement for that in some way? How can I actually engage with it? And it's really helpful if you were use language like something's not workable, right? Or it's a problem to be solved. It's not an indictment of you, and it's not an indictment of somebody else. So we have to be careful about the language we use when we enter into this investigation, that we do it with a kind of kindness towards ourselves and others. Then Dashanti Deva said, therefore, since he helps me on the path to awakening, for Shanti Deva, it's all he. So, therefore, since this person, right, this person helps me on the path to awakening, I should long for an enemy like a treasure discovered in the home, acquired without effort. I should long for an enemy like a treasure discovered at home, acquired without effort. I really like this because, you know, let's face it, we acquire these problems without any effort. There they are, right there at home, you know, right there where we live as human beings. We have these problems and they just come up. You know, our suffering just seems to bubble up all the time. I mean, I guess there are people out there, maybe here, people who are like, you know, the whole glass half empty, full thing. So I know for myself, I'm not the most optimistic person in the world. So I have those treasures lying around, you know, all over the place. So you may be one of those people who, you know, you're always optimistic, and that's great. But for those of us, and I think this is mostly Zen practitioners. For most of us, we have these little treasures lying around. So I love the way you put that. A treasure discovered in the home, acquired without effort. So this way in which we are, as human beings, we don't have to go anywhere. We don't have to do anything to practice. You know, that those opportunities are endlessly presenting themselves. We used to have this kind of rueful phrase, you know, an opportunity to practice. Well, we have many opportunities to practice these treasures that are lying around. Then he said, because I'm able to practice patience with this person is worthy of being given the very first fruits of my patience, for in this way, they are the cause of it. So, because I'm able to practice patience, any time that we are able to practice, especially in ways that we can practice that are doable for us. You know, the weight is not too big. It's like we can actually address this practice. And in my experience, that's in our everyday lives, at the supermarket, driving our cars, whatever it is that we're doing in our everyday life, and we're finding that we're frustrated or angry or whatever it is that's coming up for us, it's a kind of negative emotion. That's where we need to stop and actually look at what we're doing right then and there, not wait for something really big to happen. And so he says, because I'm able to practice patience in this situation, that situation or that person is absolutely, completely worthy to receive my altered behavior. Right in that moment, because that person is the person who caused me to alter my behavior. So this is a way of saying, essentially, don't waste your time, practice right now. Because sometimes when something happens, it's difficult, or there's a difficult situation, we'll say, I know what the practice is here, but I'll do it later. You know, I know that this would be a good opportunity for me to be generous, but I'll do it next time. This would be a good opportunity for me to be patient, but no, I think I'll do that next time. So this, because our small self doesn't want to do it. You know, the selfish part of ourselves doesn't want to do it. we're like, it's not just a kind of, I don't think it's a kind of throwaway thing, you know, because we're this little voice in us when it says, you know, I have that. And we kind of ignore that, but actually, needs to be paid attention to. You know, we need to say, hey, okay, I hear you, but, and we're going to do this thing. We're going to practice generosity here. We're going to be empathic here. We're going to actually stop and listen at this moment. That's our practice. Don't waste your time. Do it now. Don't do it some other time. Do it right now. Then he says, that person should be worthy of veneration just like the sacred Dharma because he is the cause of patience. In the Lotus Sutra in chapter 25, there's a list of all of these beings that are actually bodhisattvas, all these entities that appear to you who are bodhisattvas, difficult situations. Even, I love this, in chapter 26, even women and children. Okay, the next section of verses is about how to develop compassion and the desire to benefit sentient beings. So that's the kind of next section. So this next verse is, a Buddha's qualities are gained from... This is a little convoluted. A Buddha's qualities are gained from sentient beings and Buddhas alike. So why do I not respect sentient beings in the same way that I respect Buddhas? So, Chantideva is saying, if we gain understanding from the Buddha's teaching and from our fellow human beings, then why do I revere Buddhas more than humans? So I thought, okay, that's kind of an interesting thing. I was like curious about, like, that's something to actually wonder about. Why is it that we put more credence in this idea that we have about Buddhas than we do our ideas we have about human beings? And I thought, well, first of all, we don't experience Buddhas in the flesh. Our idealized version of what a Buddha is, we don't experience that, right? Do you know anybody who fits your idealized version of a Buddha? And I suspect if you knew the Dalai Lama, you would discover that no, he does not fit that. He probably gets angry. He probably has all these, you know, different things that we're all engaged in. He probably has his own struggles. So we don't experience our idea of a Buddha in the flesh. We have their teachings, and it's a lot easier to interpret them in ways that enable us to ignore the inconvenient parts, right? It's a lot easier to ignore what inconveniences us than it is to idolize. And so we come up with this idealization of what it is that we think this perfect person is. So if we get this, he says, a Buddha's qualities are gained from sentient beings and Buddhas alike. So these qualities that we are working with, these qualities that we attribute to this perfection of Buddhahood, we receive those qualities through these teachings and through our teachers. And in Tibetan Buddhism, usually teachers are thought of as being Buddhas, which I think can be problematic, because if your teacher is not up to that, because we're human beings, that can be a problem if we idealize that person. But there's also this way that if we look at our teachers of Buddhas in the sense that they are not abstract, your teachers ask of you that you practice, right? Our teachers ask us to practice. Our teachers present the teachings to us, and we go and talk to them, and they push us a little bit. You know, they say, oh, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Because it's a lot easier, I think, when we're reading teachings and there's not a person there, it's a lot easier for us to kind of pick and choose. And what we usually pick and choose is what makes us feel most comfortable. So we do the practices that we feel comfortable with, but we don't do the practices that make us feel uncomfortable. And the problem with a human being teacher is that they might point out to you that you're doing the practices that make you comfortable and not doing the practices that make you uncomfortable. So this way that we actually engage with each other on this level. So the equality between Buddhists and humans is that Buddhists provide the guide for awakening, but human beings offer the means for awakening. So the Buddhas give us the guidance, the teachings, and the way. But it's actually our interactions with human beings, our interactions in our everyday world, that it is that offers the means to us to awaken to Buddha's way. So this is very important, that we have both of these things simultaneously. So Shantideva is saying, a Buddha's qualities are gained from sentient beings. This way that we understand what it is to be a Buddha is gained through our interactions with each other as sentient beings. So why do not respect sentient beings in the same way that I respect Buddhas? The other thing is that in our teaching, Soto Zen, all beings are Buddha. Everything is Buddha. Everything. The bowing mat here is Buddha. The tape recorder is Buddha. You are Buddha. I am Buddha. And that's true because everything is essentially this process that's making the world. And that altruistic process of making the world is Buddha nature. That is the nature of a Buddha. A Buddha's nature is to come forward and to facilitate and to do this practice, this altruistic practice, which is making the world. And to respond for us as human beings, to bring forward our Buddha nature, Dogen says in Bushōi, says, Buddha nature and Buddhahood must arise simultaneously. So this is a little tricky, but Buddha nature is the reality of life itself. Yet simultaneously, Buddha nature cannot be expressed unless we express it. Right? So we have to actually do the practice for Buddha nature to arise and express itself, even though it's already fully 100% there. So this Buddha nature and Buddhahood, this nature of being a Buddha, must be expressed through our actions in order to express this practice. So we express this practice by doing the practice. So in Soto Zen, we say practice realization. We don't practice Buddhism to be realized. We practice Buddhism because it is an expression of realization. We do the practice because it expresses realization. We don't do it in order to get realized. So every time that you practice patience, every time that you practice skillful means, every time that you engage in these practices, you are expressing your own Buddha nature, which is already completely fully present, and yet simultaneously we have to make effort to presence it. And so we are simultaneously Buddha human, you know, super speed, as Katagiri Roshi would say, fully expressing itself in this moment. So that's what we're about. That's what we're making our effort to do. So in that way, why are we critical of human beings and not of Buddhas? Why are we caught in this idealized version of what a Buddha is? And I would suggest to you, because that's easier for us. That's easier for us to think about. Being around somebody we perceive as an idealized Buddha requires nothing of us in a certain way. It's very inspiring, but it doesn't require of us that we practice. But when we're with human beings and we're dealing with difficulties, then all of a sudden we have to practice, right? Then all of a sudden it's like, well, this person is a pain in the ass. You know, I don't like this person. I don't want to communicate with them. I don't want to deal with them. I'm going to do what my mom does, which is I'm going to stick them under the rug and go, you know, get out of my face. So this is where, you know, the rubber meets the road. This is where we actually have to respond. And then benefiting living beings delights the Tathagatas. So a Tathagata is a Buddha. Benefiting living beings delights the Tathagatas and perfectly accomplishes my own purpose as well. Your own purpose would be that deepest desire to practice. In addition, it dispels the pain and misery of the universe. Therefore, I should always practice it. Benefiting living beings delights the Tathagatas and perfectly accomplishes my own purpose as well. In addition, it dispels the pain and misery of the universe. Therefore, I should always practice it. Our Bodhisattva vow is to benefit all beings. Beings are numberless. I vow to actually save them. I'll say benefit. Beings are numberless. I vow to benefit them. Dharma gates are endless. I vow to enter them. Those are those opportunities that we find as treasures right there lying in our own home, in our own lives. Let's see. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter. The Buddha's way is... what's that missing one?
Delusions
are inexhaustible. Right? I vow to end them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. So this Bodhisattva vow to benefit all beings, this is the Bodhisattva's deepest vow. This is what causes the Bodhisattva to come back, to be reborn over and over and over again. Because the Bodhisattva's karma that causes them to be reborn is this desire to benefit all beings. So this deepest vow, this practicing and learning this Bodhisattva Buddha's way is also our vow. So the Dalai Lama said, I ran across this yesterday, every single being, even those who are hostile to us, is just as afraid of suffering as we are and seeks happiness in the same way we do. Every person has the same right as we do to be happy and not to suffer. So let's take care of others wholeheartedly, of both our friends and our enemies. This is the basis for true compassion. It's interesting, we become so polarized because we are afraid of suffering. So we want to reject the other because we're afraid that we're going to suffer. And we don't acknowledge that the other is also doing their best to seek happiness. And that their way of seeking happiness may not be any more workable than our own way of seeking happiness. This creates a kind of compassion and empathy when we recognize this. And everybody has the same right not to suffer, just like we have the right not to suffer. And that we keep that in mind. And this goes along with this teaching that everything has intrinsic value. Everything is Buddha nature. Everything has a function, even if we don't know what it is. So then he says, let's take care of others wholeheartedly, both our friends and our enemies. And that may be a koan, right? That's a koan. How do I take care of? Isn't it a koan just to ask yourself, how do I take care of myself? How do I take care of my friends in a way that exhibits wisdom and compassion and skillful means? How do I take care of people that I don't like? You know, what does that mean? How can I do that? How? What? You know. And then, so we make these vows. We have faith in the teachings. We put our effort foremost. We keep remembering our effort as practitioners. Keep coming back to it. Not in a way that defeats us. Not in a way that overcomes us. But in a way that we can do. You know, in a way that's doable. That we keep coming back to that. Yes, we get to go take vacations, you know, we get to go take care of ourselves, but at the same time, we just, you know, what is it? What is it? How can I come forward? How can I meet this situation in a way that's wholesome and helpful for both self and others? And when we fall down, we're always able to get up again if we approach practice this way. It doesn't become a weight that flattens us. We're able to stand up again. As Dogen says, we use the ground to get up off the ground. The ground is not just this, right? The ground is also the ground of our practice. The ground is also the ground of reality. The ground is also this way in which we are in a complete interconnected process, a great mandala of the world making the world. That ground, that practice, that altruistic faith in that practice is the ground that helps us to get off the ground. So please, all of us who are honored followers of the way, let's keep the faith. Okay? Thank you.